we have some federal grant application requests, which I plan to have public hearings and work session. And the first one is Department of Human Services State Oral Health Collaborative Systems Grant. So Grant or whoever's on deck, Danelda, come up and let's begin, because I understand we have full at 1:30, which means, and their full is in this room, so our timetable is rather short, and my apologies to the committee. I just got rid of these this morning. Danelda.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Danelda Dodson from the Department of Human Services. I'm the administrator for the Office of Family Health. And we're here to ask permission to apply for an oral health grant that really comes in two parts. We just learned of this. It was just published in the Federal Registry last week on the 18th. And it is due, originally they told us it was due the 25th, and then we just learned that we can have until the 29th of this month. The purpose of this grant is to help communities with developing oral health programs. And our idea is to provide these resources to local communities to work with communities on Sealant programs. We've identified that we could probably fund about 4 communities for the Sealant program, and then anywhere up to 10 communities to work with them on fluoride varnish for young children to prevent cavities in these children. The grants are $50,000 each. There is no general fund requirement, no match requirement, and all of the resources would go to the local communities.
Jeremy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeremy Penn with the Department of Administrative Services. DAS recommends approval of the request.
Cindy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cindy Jones. LFO recommends approval of the request with the understanding that if additional federal fund expenditure limitation or positions are needed, that the agency will return to the emergency board.
Any questions from the committee? I do have one. What is the probability of the renewal of the grant should you be successful in winning or obtaining approval from the federal government?
Madam Chair, according to the RFP, this is a 1 year, but it's tied with our other ongoing funding with our other maternal and child health, and so the idea is that this would be incorporated into other systems. So we're hearing rumbles that there will be other funding for oral health, but we haven't heard anything definite.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
Generally speaking, Madam Chair, this is directed to Hi, by the way.
Hi.
generally speaking, people of low income have the greatest need for this type of care. Are you setting up a process to address this going to the areas of the greatest need?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, yes. We have been working with our communities. We've done interviews with various communities to identify what is being done in their communities. We're identifying where there are specific low-income pockets of need, and then we'd work with those school districts for sealants, and we work with those communities on preventive services for early childhood caries prevention.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We are in work session. Are there Representative Frank Morris?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The purpose of this grant is certainly worthwhile, but in your judgment, is there a critical mass in terms of the amount of funding that below which it becomes so diffused that it just doesn't work? I mean, when I think about all of the opportunities across the state and $100,000 for this effort and the cost of gearing up and pushing it, granted, $100,000 is still a lot of money, but with respect to the opportunities and the need, it seems to be quite small.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, you're correct. That's why we've identified that we are going to look at 4 community sites for the first $50,000 and then up to 10 community sites for the second $50,000. And if this was all that we had, it would be very difficult. But we're putting it together with the other oral health grants that we've received over the last year so that we have people there that can give oversight. We've already done a lot of groundwork to talk to the communities about who is interested, who is ready. So we feel like we've got the basic information there. And the other factor is that we've been told that the first 50,000 is almost a guarantee that it's just going to go out to all states. And then if there are additional resources available left over, they will give us an extra 50,000. So it's almost as though it's guaranteed that we'll get the first part.
Thank you. How many children do you think would be served?
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, that's difficult to assess depending upon the community. From my past experience, I know in some communities you can usually the school size is around 300 children per class for dental sealants. So you could do in one community 1,000 children fairly easily. But it just kind of depends upon which community. If it's a small community, we would not want to deny access to those children just because they were small. It was a small number, unless that was a parameter set by somebody.
Madam Chair.
President Banks.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Donaldo, my memory serves right. I may be wrong. My memory is we already have programs in place. We're trying to work with these sealant programs for low-income children anyway. And this is an enhancement of those programs, and I believe also that this is sort of a national thing we're seeing more and more of. My last visit with NCSL was over a year ago on this because we were here, not with NCSL. So. And there is an attempt to reach more and more, especially kids at risk for this, and this is a piece of that. So this shouldn't be seen, hopefully, it's just end-all and be-all. This is just a piece of it. We're building on what we have, and we're going to try to build further from this point on as more funds become available at the federal, state level, or on a voluntary basis, trying to reach these kids to prevent caries.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, that's correct. We were successful in applying for and obtaining some Robert Wood Johnson grant funds aimed at this population also, and so we have that going on in three major pilot communities across the state. And this is part of the Surgeon General's report on oral health. So this is the federal response on trying to reach the populations in need and trying to take resources and put them out into communities so that we can start building oral health services at the community level.
Are there any additional questions?
I just probably like one last statement.
Well, I'm going to need not to let you do that. We've got to be out of here at 1:30.
You might actually enjoy this one.
Will I? Okay. And we've got three other pieces to do.
Let's go. Let's do it.
If there's no objection, I believe that Senator Gordley moves.
I do.
Senator Gordley moves that we recommend to the full committee the request to apply to the federal government for the grant application. With oral health collaborative systems. Are there any objections? And Senator Gordon can take it. The next grant application request, and I'll have both come up. It seems as if we have two agencies, both of whom are applying for the same grant request, the Employment Outcomes Grant, Department of Human Services, and the Commission for the Blind. So it'll be interesting if two agencies are applying for the same, what happens with the federal government and which one will be successful. That's kind of interesting. Go ahead.
On the feds, they won't figure it out.
Actually, we look at this as a great opportunity. My name's Lene Rutledge. I'm with the Department of Human Services, the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation Services, and I'm here representing the portion of the grant that we're trying to write that would be specific to transitioning youth and young adults. And the grant application is actually from the U.S. Department of Education, the Rehabilitation Services Administration, which funds vocational rehabilitation programs. I'm going to ask Linda to introduce herself so that you can hear how both of these really fit together.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Linda Mock, and I'm administrator of the Commission for the Blind. And as Lene was explaining, we are both applying for this grant. We do have different priority populations which our grants would serve. There is no prohibition from having two grants that would be awarded to one state. However, there are a small number, only four being awarded nationally. The Commission for the Blind is responding to the invitational priority, which states that you need to develop mentorship programs with consumer-based membership organizations. We have two such organizations in Oregon, the National Federation of the Blind and the Oregon Council of the Blind, both of whom are very actively interested in participating with us in developing a proposal that would provide this type of mentorship programs. We would partner with other agencies, including the Vocational Rehabilitation Division, should we receive this grant in really establishing mentors who are individuals with other disabilities for our multiply impaired population, and also providing mentors for individuals with visual impairments who are served through the Vocational Rehabilitation Services. We also, of course, have many of our clients who receive services from other I guess the word isn't divisions anymore. Other sections within DHS, particularly SPD. So we would be partnering with them as well as with the educational programs, the regional programs for the visually impaired, and the Oregon School for the Blind.
Again, just if I can just make a couple more comments, and then we'd be glad to answer any questions. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the grant application actually came, it became available on August the 4th, and it's due September the 4th. And it clearly says in the request for proposals that there's an invitational priority, and the invitational priority is for consumer-controlled organizations that have membership structures, which is what makes it most appropriate for the Commission for the Blind to submit an application. At the same time, they clearly say that they will look favorably at applications that they receive that they don't fund in this federal fiscal year for what they anticipate to be more grant awards in the next federal fiscal year, which is why we're also interested in applying. We cannot meet the invitational priority. We do not have consumer-controlled membership organizations for people with disabilities, but we do meet the broad absolute priority, and we've had an existing relationship with mentorship programs and organizations in Oregon that could help us be successful in this.
I noticed that, Linda, that you mentioned the Centers for Independent Living, and we were not able to restore the funding back at the level that it had been before. Will any of the dollars go to, in some way, to assist that effort?
Madam Chair, the proposal that the Commission for the Blind has would fund, and actually it's a requirement of the grant, I believe, that some of the funds actually go directly to the mentors. We're looking at those as honorariums that would be paid to the participants who are the mentors within the program. So it would be going directly to those individuals rather than into the budgets of the independent living centers.
Madam Chair,
Representative,
can you explain just very quickly what the mentors actually do?
Well, in the proposal that we're putting together, we would have a number of activities that we would structure to help the mentors, get off to a good relationship and establish contact with the mentees, I guess. And essentially, we thought we would use the model of a Living with Blindness seminar where we would have structured activities and opportunities for them to talk about adjustment to their disability issues related specifically to their blindness. We have used this model with adults and have had it be very successful and have a lot of impact. And we would typically bring individuals together, and for youth, we would try to also incorporate a fun activity, perhaps skiing, whitewater rafting, that type of activity, to initially establish the relationship with the mentors. And then we would ask that the mentors maintain that relationship with the individual. We are looking at wanting them to do some things like modeling of work behaviors, allowing the individuals to shadow them on their work. If we have college students who have recently graduated and are working with students going to college, to encourage them on what skills they need to develop to be successful in their college education. So we would be planning a number of group activities throughout the years that would bring the individuals together as a group and then ask that the mentors also do individual activities with the individuals they're mentoring. This, by the way, I don't think we mentioned, is a five-year project. So were we funded, it would be in existence for 5 years.
And how does your...
Ditto. Madam Chair, members of the committee, very much the same way. We would use people that are currently employed or have graduated from college to serve as the mentors for young adults and youth with disabilities so that they have positive role models, so that they can talk in terms of what made it successful for them to complete a graduate program or an undergraduate program, what makes it successful for people to become employed and stay employed and do many of the same activities. We work with a business leadership network up in Portland, which is a group of employers committed to the employment of people with disabilities, and we plan to work collectively with the Youth Leadership Forum, which is an organizational structure that provides leadership training for people with disabilities during the summer. So we want to build on those successful activities.
Any further questions?
Madam Chair, would you like one motion to move?
I think I'd like one motion to move both of the packages and so that it's all inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I move approval of the Department of Human Services grant application.
Before that, I need to hear from Jeremy. I'm sorry. Jeremy. I don't want to cut you out today, Jeremy.
Have to have my piece. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jeremy Patton with DAS. We recommend approval of both requests.
Cindy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, LFO recommends approval of the grant applications with the understanding that the agencies will return to the emergency board for any additional federal fund limitation or positions.
Now, Senator Gordon. Senator Gordon.
Thank you.
You can tell it's winding down.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of the Department of Human Services Employment Outcomes Grant and the Commission for the Blind Employment Outcomes Grant.
Senator Gordley moves that we recommend to the School Ways and Means Committee the Employment Outcomes Grant and the Commission for the Blind Employment Outcomes Grant with the understanding that should they be successful in obtaining the federal funds, that they will return to the e-board for limitation increase and or any FTE approval. Are there any objections? Thank you. Carrier. Let's give it to the approval. And I'm going to open a public hearing work session on Senate Bill 343 relating to water systems. And Cindy, you want to walk us through, and I know Grant's there, so you want to come up and... The backflow problem.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you should have a packet at the very bottom of your stack of paperwork for Senate Bill 343A.
Do we have another grant?
And within that packet, there's a copy of the staff measure summary, a fiscal impact statement, and the bill itself, Senate Bill 343A. The bill authorizes the Director of Human Services to establish a program regulating the installation, maintenance, and repair of cross connections and backflow prevention devices that are part of the water system. It also creates a fee schedule for cross-connection and backflow prevention programs. We just found out prior to the subcommittee meeting that there are A3 amendments, and I'll pass those out.
Because I think we're the only committee that's open.
Is it a go-home bill for somebody like all of us?
Well, you know, actually, backflow issues. I mean, seriously, if you work in
huge health issue.
I realize that.
She's a doctor.
I realize that.
So I think it does relate to health.
It just seems a strange bill to be looking at, and on potentially the last day of session.
I don't know where it's been hung up.
Yeah, with, where'd this come from? You know.
Gordon,
strikes me as strange. I'm sorry.
Grant, you want
to? And it's got amendments too.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Amanda Rich, and hopefully I can clear up some of the confusion for you. I'm here today representing a couple of entities. First, I represent the Special Districts Association of Oregon, and we have a number of water districts, close to 200, that care quite a lot about backflow devices as they use them to protect their water systems. And I also represent the Association of Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors, who also care about backflow devices as plumbing contractors frequently install these devices. So the reason, if I can venture a guess as to why you're seeing this today and rather not a few weeks ago, is I think it has just been hung up in the number of bills that have been in the Ways and Means process, and we just managed to get it to rise to the surface, so to speak.
So to speak.
I
had nothing to do with my name.
Oh,
that's right.
I think a little clearer. The curtains are being parted. Thank you.
So we definitely appreciate your attention in these waning hours. I don't think I'm giving anybody any new information by saying that a backflow device is a, very simply a device that protects the public water system from unsanitary water flowing back out of an internal plumbing system from a building or other facility. About 15 or 20 years ago, these devices were essentially used on industrial buildings. Within those last few years, they've been started to be used on residences, and it has been since then that some confusion has come up between water systems wondering, well, when do we use these on our residences that we serve, and when do we not? Who installs them? Where do we install them? Confusion about who tests these devices, and how and what kind of training do they need, and what's their scope of work versus plumber scope of work. Just a number of issues that have come up. All of these issues and conflicts, so to speak, came to a head last session. Then Representative Schrader, now your esteemed co-chair, set forth a group and said, please go fix this over the interim, or I will be forced to have to fix it for you. And so we did just that, and a task force of 19 people, whom I have a list of here if you're at all interested in knowing who served on the task force, got together and created a set of rules to regulate the installation and maintenance of backflow devices. However, before the good work of this group, which is contained here in these rules, which I know you also don't want, can be implemented, we do need this bill to allow DHS to go forward with this program, to adopt these rules, and also assess a small fee to support this program, and so we can solve all these questions and problems that hundreds and hundreds of water systems across the state are having with trying to install these backflow devices. So very simply, that's what we're doing here today. The A3s are essentially a technical fix that just arose out of some drafting issues from the original amendments that were placed in on Senate Business Committee, and they are signed off on by all of the stakeholders, and we would hope that you would adopt those as well before you send the bill out to full.
Are there questions? Representative Scott?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the fee schedule on page 2, help me with that. Does that cover the individuals that would have to have an annual inspection fee on all the backflow devices?
Actually, Madam Chair, Representative Scott, the fee actually applies to the water systems. It is a fee that they would pay when they submit their annual report that describes what type of devices they have out there. And it would not apply to the individual who pays their annual inspection fee for their backflow device. It applies to the water systems.
Follow up.
Does it have any governing or application to the individual inspections? In other words, will they come under this same criteria, the people that are currently able to do it? Will they have to go through this certification? Will it be just plumbers? What does that change at all?
Answer that. Okay.
through the chair to Representative Scott. My name is Ron Murray. I'm with the United Association of Plumbers and Steam Fitters, Local 290. The way this bill is currently written is people that are currently certified, nothing will change, and actually nothing is going to change for the certification process in the future, except for the fact that it's going to become easier. This bill establishes a third-party certification process. So whether it's the American Water Works Association, the American Society of Sanitary Engineers, or any other group of that stature, the Health Division will be allowed to accept their certification process. For the individual tester themselves, actually the fee that will be paid to the state should decrease because of the acceptance of the other third-party certification processes.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Griffin Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. Are backflow prevention devices already statutorily required?
Through the Chair, Representative Smith, in many cases, yes, they are, and it's dependent upon the degree of hazard. Where there has been a gray area, so to speak, is there hasn't been a clear line of delineation as to what actually entailed that hazard. And I think that that's been a real bane not only to the industry but to the consumer and to the contractor as well. What we've attempted to do through the rules, and we've kind of put the cart before the horse, it's a huge package of rules, is to clearly delineate what is necessary before a backflow prevention device, of which there are several different types, is necessary to be installed.
Follow-up question. How do you manage this program in our very smallest communities?
Through the chair, Representative Smith, one of the beauties of the backflow prevention program is the state mandates currently that a backflow prevention device must be installed by a licensed plumber. By using the licensing criteria, the device is inspected with the original plumbing installation. Anytime a device would be added to a potable water system, that installation must be inspected as part of the plumbing inspection process. So all of that is taken care of before the Health Division actually even gets their foot in the door. This bill here is primarily for the reinspection of devices, or in other words, to ensure that they're working in the manner that they were designed to work. But initial installation is actually handled through Building Code Division.
I'm willing to cast an eye vote on this, but I have some reservations because I know what a black backflow device is, and I know how simple they are to put in. And, you know, I'm the son of a journeyman plumber, and so I could say that. And, you know, in our smallest communities, quite often it isn't a licensed plumber putting these in. It's, you know, the rancher putting it on there because he doesn't want the hose going into the trough and coming right back up the line and through there. And so, and I guess as you're implementing this, I hope you'll be sensitive to the fact that not every part of the state has access to a licensed plumber at their disposal. You know, in our case, it could be 60 miles, 70 miles away for an item that takes about 3 minutes to put in.
I think that's even true on fairgrounds.
Systems.
Senator Morris.
Quick question. I know we're running out of time. Could you explain why we're collecting 50% more revenue than we have projected expenses? Do you have an answer?
Chair Winters, Senator Morse, I was not involved with the development of this fiscal impact statement, but if you read the bill, it is the fee may not exceed. And then it gives those numbers, and I believe that the fiscal impact then was taken from the maximum numbers. We will collect what we need to run the program and no more than that. So we'll figure that out as we get the bill passed and move further on.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, follow-up question. That troubled me.
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, in the fiscal, the extra money that was in there was allowing for a fund balance to cover the first quarter of 5/07 for the 0507 biennium.
You're satisfied with that?
Yes, I was.
Senator Carter.
I look in the background information on the measured summary. And it says the Building Codes Division possesses the expertise to administer and enforce this program. Mm-hmm. So why is it over here in this program, Madam Chair? That's my question. Okay, sir.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, the reason that we chose in this coalition of folks that we're working with here to leave this program with the Department of Human Services is because they already have the expertise in drinking water safety and protection of that, and that also already had the cross-connection tester program. So it was a good nexus, a good fit.
Yeah, it sounds like that. And I'm glad to see two agencies working together. That's good.
Okay. Any further questions? Are there any objections? Senator Carter moves.
Madam Chair, I move the A3 amendments to Senate Bill 343.
Senator Carter moves the A3 amendments to Senate Bill 343. Are there any objections? Senator Carter.
Move Senate Bill 343A to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Carter moves the Senate Bill 343 with the A3 amendments to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections?
No question. Well, not a question. Let me comment real quick. So we're all sitting here together. Cindy Jones has been on leave of absence from another department for the last month to work for this.
We'll be back today.
Can you be back today again?
I don't think so. I don't know.
You don't know if you'll carry that one or not. Okay.
I want to thank her for the work she's done this last year. And right. There's someone coming in fresh.
Well, thank you, Cindy. And, you know, she's on job rotation for those of you who did not know.
Yeah.
And, Cindy, you might want to... I'm going to go ahead and gavel them so that we know that this is staff. But, Cindy, you might want to share with us what your experience has been from your job rotation, working on Ways and Means. Because I know that
it's been lots of fun. Met a lot of really nice people.
I think she said she didn't know that we worked so hard.
Make them work hard.
Okay, with that, we are adjourned, and I know that we have full next.
I need a carrier.
Representative Smith.
Ms. and G. Smith. The plumbing guy.
The plumbing guy.
I go, yeah, we're better off.